Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Peter Friedel, who is the CEO of Seamless. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining me today.
Hi.
So just a little context for the audience here. Seamless is a global mobile payments company based in one of my all-time favorite cities in the world, Stockholm, Sweden. And a company that says on its website that its mobile wallet, Secure, is Sweden and Europe's most used mobile wallet online and in stores. That's a pretty big claim. And so, Peter, my first question to you is, how do you measure usage and who are you beating in these markets?
Well, I would say it's a smaller claim than it sounds. As a matter of fact, we are the only mobile payment system that is in production. There is a lot of noise in the market, but all the other players are really doing sort of beta or pilot testing, et cetera, et cetera. So it's quite an easy claim to make, I would say. But you know, on the question of how we measure usage, we tend to come back to Sweden. That was the first country we launched in, and that is now about 2 years ago, almost exactly. And in that time, we attracted about 400,000 Swedes that use our mobile payment systems, and then that would represent some, give or take, 4% of the Swedish population. They do about 16,000 transactions a day, so that's sort of how we measure it, both in how many consumers are, if you want, active users, and then how much payments do they do every day. Now, of course, we've launched in Finland, Romania, and Belgium, that is now live markets for us in production. And, you know, it's picking up there too, but, you know, Sweden has a 2-year lead. And, you know, countries like Portugal, like we've announced, we're actually not up there yet. That would be late in Q4 this year.
So, Peter, two follow-on questions. How have you managed to get into production? And so many others are still trying. What is your secret to getting to market? And what about what you do makes you unique enough to actually get consumers and merchants to agree to give you a try?
Well, actually, it's also sort of easy. I mean, you follow a very sort of predictable path with these mobile payment systems. First, you invent and build the technology. Then you have to attract merchants. And then you attract consumers. There's a lot of talk that there's a sort of a chicken and egg problem between the merchants and the consumers, that the merchants don't want to take on a solution that has no attached consumers to it. This is not true. It's only true if the merchants actually have an investment to make in order to take on the technology. Now, coming back to the technology, I mean, Secure, we always said it has to fulfill certain absolute demands, so to say. And that would be first, and that's really true with any technology, that there got to be a business case. No technology has ever got traction unless there was a business case for somebody. You can start with the wheel. So we said that, you know, for merchants or for consumers to take on a technology, they have to make money. Very, very simple. Number two, we were aware of this problem that merchants will not take on a I mean, when you come to a merchant and you say, in a new country, and you say, please, can you accept our mobile payments? They will say, yes, what does it cost? And you say, well, in our case, zero. And as a matter of fact, you'll make money every time a consumer does a transaction because we charge half of the card fees. The merchant ticks that box. What happens after that, the third question that comes is always, how many consumers do you have? And our answer when we go into a new country is, of course, zero. But you mitigate that problem by the merchant not having an investment. And on the other hand, with that chicken and egg problem, you will never get consumers to download an app to pay with unless you can pay somewhere. So the merchant has to come first, right? So that's what we did. We built a technology that made the merchants money to start with. And how do we do that? Well, that's one of the core features of Secure, is that it does not route the payments over the card rails. it routes it over the direct debit, various netting functions that exist in different countries. Those routing paths of payments cost virtually nothing, which means that our raw material cost for the payment is virtually nothing, which means that we can offer it at a very attractive rate to merchants. So that's how we solve the merchant adaptation. Then, of course, the consumers, who is also a stakeholder in this, and I'm sure we'll discuss this more during this interview, is also has to make some money. But the interesting fact is that if you don't run your payment on the card rails, there is plenty of, dough to go around. So you can also attract consumers with very sort of attractive offers and your bonuses, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's the key for attracting the consumers.
So, Peter, let me ask you a couple of questions about that, because I agree mm-hmm. there needs to be a business case. And that is really why mobile payments everywhere have kind of stalled. But Apple Pay, which has been in the mm-hmm. market now for a couple of weeks, has really surprised a lot of people because it has created a business model that imposes a lot of additional cost in the system. So the issuers pay Apple Pay on every mm-hmm. transaction. And there's an intermediary between the merchant and the consumer. And yet everyone is fine with that because there is this overwhelming expectation that two things will happen, that consumers that love their iPhones and the Apple brand will download Apple Pay and want to use it. And secondly, that Apple, with its history of innovation, will do things to create a very compelling experience. So they've really, now of course they had merchants as well, but not a lot. They really didn't have a lot to start with, and they leveraged merchant NFC capabilities that were already in the market. So how do you absorb that information and that experience as you think about business cases with what you're doing with Seamless? Because I know you're coming to the U.S. and looking at the market and looking at the business cases. When there's this powerful player called Apple Pay, that's kind of rewritten the rules.
Well, first of all, we're very happy that Apple finally came into the market. We've been waiting for it for a long time, and we felt it was very important that they entered the market in order to get more buzz around it and to get consumers more aware of that you can actually pay with your mobile phone. Now, Apple will be a big player in the payment market, but they will not be a new monopolistic force, or if you see what I'm saying. I mean, yep. For one thing, I mean, they're limited to the number or the market share of who actually have iPhones. That's their absolute ceiling. Now, the other thing is that, yes, I love Apple and they have great innovation, et cetera, et cetera. But here they actually didn't innovate anything. I mean, it's pretty much a copy of Google Wallet. As a matter of fact, all the merchants that accept Apple Pay also accept Google Wallet, because what happens with the technology that they're using is that essentially the phone emulates a card via an NFC signal. So it's the phone becomes an overlay tool over a card, which is exactly what Google Wallet did. Google didn't succeed, well, so far, I should say. They've had very little traction on their Google Wallet, and we shall see if they will reinvent themselves. But Apple coming in and doing pretty much exactly the same thing, why should Apple succeed and Google should not? And I think the only reason for that is the strength of the brand. Right. And I think you touched on it in your question. Apple users are very, very loyal to the brand, and they tend to pick up on what Apple does. And I think in there they have a strength that surpasses Google. But really, that's the only difference.
Well, I do agree with you that they haven't reinvented the model yet, but they certainly have changed the conversation about mobile payments, I think, in a variety of ways. And so as Seamless thinks about the U.S. market and entering the U.S. market, how has the entry of Apple Pay changed your conversation within the Seamless organization about your approach to mobile payments in the U.S.?
Well, it hasn't changed it much, quite frankly, because it's an interesting, it's a new technology. Or rather, let me take a few steps back and say, mobile payments, why? You know, it's not like the card is broken or anything. I mean, card is convenient, it's fast, et cetera, et cetera. But there's two things that you can achieve with the mobile as a payment tool. The first is disintermediation, and I'll come back to that. And the second is interaction with the consumer. And if we start with the second there, the interaction with the consumer, I mean, it's pretty hard to interact with the consumer on a piece of plastic. It's pretty much impossible. So the mobile as a tool that you use for the payment is very forceful as a advertisement tool, as a pushing coupons, or which is good for both the consumer and the merchant. So this is why merchants see they see an added value in the mobile payments compared to cards. But if we go back to the first thing, which is disintermediation, and why does the mobile give you sort of possibility of disintermediation? Well, if you think about what a card reader in a store is, in a physical store, it's a card reader, but it's also, in a sense, a router that pushes the payment, it routes the payment through or to the card rails. And that's where all these fees happen. If you instead route through the direct debit network, and to put it in US terms, either you route it through the card's payment network, called the card, or you route it through ACH. Now, the phone can, of course, act as a router. And that is what we've done with Secure. We can, instead of routing it, as I said, I've said many times, through the card network, we route it through the ACH. So it allows you to disintermediate the card value chain, okay? So if you choose to route your transactions through our ACH, then you disintermediate the whole card value chain, the payment processors, the card companies themselves, or the networks, Visa, MasterCard, and the card issuers. And that is the whole raison d'etre, so to say, for, you know, that's how you make money on it. Now, what Apple Pay has done is quite interesting, and this we've discussed at the company. If the phone is the tool you're paying with, that is the user interface that the client sees. So you suddenly own the client, the consumer, you are communicating with him or her. Now, so the merchants that turn on the NFC capability in their terminals, they basically said, we give up on this game. It will be a card payment because it's an emulated Visa or MasterCard. When you stand in front of this reader and wave around your phone, I mean, the merchant really doesn't see that it's a mobile phone payment. They just see a card payment, right?
Yep.
Now, that opens up for anybody who has the interface to the consumer, i.e. who has the downloaded app, to start issuing cards. Now, and this is, if you want, a Pandora's box. And I am very curious. Well, there's two things with Apple Pay that makes me very curious. First, the merchants, because if they turn on that capacity, they will not only accept Google Wallet or Apple Pay, they will accept anybody who is issuing cards and emulating them by an NFC signal. Do you see what I'm saying there?
Yep.
Yeah.
Except I think the reason that merchants are doing this remains to be seen. It's been, you know, a couple of weeks, so it's you know, there's a long, long road ahead of, you know, even Apple Pay igniting in the space. But I think as we're seeing play out with the drama between Apple Pay and currency, you know, the MCX merchant consortia here in the U.S.
Yeah.
It's really for the consumer to decide what they're going to use to pay at their favorite merchants. And it's always been the consumer's choice. The consumer, you know, chooses really every time she or he goes up to pay what card they pull out of their wallet and often what store to visit because of loyalty and other things that incent them to do that. It's always really been about the consumer choice. And there isn't a merchant in the world that is, especially now, is going to deny their consumer that opportunity if they want to pay for something using a payment method because they don't want to lose a sale.
Well, no, I agree with you. I both agree with you and disagree with you. The reason I agree with your statement that is the consumer, they don't want to lose the sale. But the thing is, all the consumers today also have the cards. They, by definition, have the card because else they couldn't be part of Apple Pay because they have put their card in their phone, right? Now, the battle that stands here between, and this is the core of the battle between MCX, iCurrency, and Apple Pay, that is that the merchants realized that they now have a chance to disintermediate the card companies. And why do they want to do that? Well, it's obvious. It's the card fees, which are, you know, in the U.S. a bit over 2%. This is huge. I mean, you know, these merchants, they might have a net margin of 2%. So, you know, disintermediating the cost of the actual payment could double their operational margin. And this is what MCX has understood, right? So I would be actually contradict you a little bit here. The merchant has always decided which way the consumer can pay at their store. And so, they won't lose a sale. That is true. But they will not lose a sale by denying Apple Pay because they know the consumer has, for the foreseeable future, a card also in his pocket.
I don't know about Apple Pay. I don't think anyone cared whether they could use Google Wallet or couldn't. And I think you can make that statement of a lot of other mobile wallet.
Yeah, well, there you come back to that. Apple is a very strong brand.
It's a very strong brand. And I think we're seeing this play out in the U.S. market in real time, that consumers are, you know, blasting Rite Aid and CVS on Twitter and basically, you know, yelling at those merchants by denying them the choice. Now, to your point,
it's the Appleites, right?
It's
the Apple Army.
But what's so funny is that you made this point earlier. It's a very small segment of the population. It's a very small number of people. But if you are the CEO of those merchants, why do you want this headache? And the 2% that you're saving, you know, versus the PR hit that you're taking, it just isn't worth it, even though, you know, fundamentally the principles that the merchants are advocating, you know, may make sense and may be valid. I think it's just, it's become a PR issue now with them.
That's very short term.
Yeah,
you know, that's a very short term thinking. I think what will happen here is rather that Apple, what you see now is Apple Pay version 1.0.
Yep.
And, you know, if Apple also added an ACH routing for this, then I think you would see merchants adopting it immediately.
Well, yes, but that may happen. That may happen when Apple Pay gets ahead of steam and gets some more traction. And in fact, it wouldn't surprise me at all that, you know, Apple Pay disintermediates just about everybody. But let's come back. I do want to get back to the point about what makes you different, the ACH rails and this alternative to merchants, because there's a consumer side to this as well. So in Europe, consumers are very used to direct debit.
Yes.
It's how they pay today. So moving from direct debit, giving merchants their debit information directly is probably not too far afield from what they do day to day today. Let's move to the U.S. We've lived through the series of breaches, one after another, Target, Home Depot, Neiman Marcus, you name them. I mean, it's been 25 or 30 big merchants.
Yeah.
So now you've got merchants who are saying to their consumer, I've got this great new payment method. It's called Secure. And all you have to do is give me your checking account information and you're all set. And the consumer's, you know, eyes widen and say, I'm going to give my checking account information to you. Why? You guys?
My card information has already been stolen. Why would I let my checking account to be stolen
too? There you go. So have you thought about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd be surprised to know that in Sweden, for example, our product is a credit product.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually not connected to people's bank accounts at all. And in every country that we enter into, we will already have two options. Either the credit option where you pay, you know, the merchant could pay it as normal, as from a, if you want, the card transaction. And but the consumer pay once a month, just like a normal revolving credit card.
Interesting.
Okay.
So you take the risk on those transactions then?
Well, somebody takes the risk. It's actually not us. We don't own that part of the value chain. So we teamed up with your credit companies that do this for a living, give consumers revolving credits. I mean, and you have several, of course, thousands of those companies in the U.S.
Right.
You know, GE Capital, Alliance Data. And I think you wanna think about store branded credit cards that are not on the Visa rails that, for example, Alliance Data is issuing today, for several for hundreds of chains in the U.S. Because it's really about the rails. It's not about whether it's a credit or debit. That's just the routing. You can route a credit payment through ACH. Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I wasn't aware that you were making those specific distinctions with your particular product because you
because it's two things, right? You have to think of two things. One is how you route the payment. That's where we say we will never route this through the card networks unless some very specific things happen. And then it's what is the product that the consumer actually is using? Is it a credit or a debit? And we offer both.
So how do you get consumers interested? Does the merchant have an incentive to do that since they are getting the benefit of reduced costs? So how does that work? Do they proactively go out and try to get consumers to adopt the wallet? Do you help them? Do you put together offers and promotions? How does that part work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a multi-pronged strategy, of course. I mean, we have the most common or the most popular thing we're doing is digital coupons, which is basically you get coupons in your phone and you go shop. And even if you buy these things on by accident, we work a lot with Coca-Cola, for example. So almost every week we have a new set of coupons coming out, and mostly we have Coke there, right? So if you buy a can of Coke, you get sometimes the whole value of the Coke back. And the fun thing is that this happens automatically because we have the SKU level data, as it's called. We get, you know, we're connected to the cashier machine, not to the card terminal. So we can detect that you bought that Coke and immediately send that money to your bank account, your instant cash back. This is financed by the merchants and the producers, such as Coke, but also from the credit companies that provide the credits because they all want to increase usage, right?
Sure.
But there's a lot of value to go around here because we just disintermediated the whole card rails value chain. So therefore, you know, there's plenty of funds that we can push back to consumers. Now, but otherwise, I mean, all the merchants are sending out in their direct mails, et cetera, advertisement about Secure because it's in their interest. And since they have the channels to market already, we, if you want, piggyback on those. And nobody, it's no real cost to anybody.
So a couple of final questions. What does the merchant have to actually do to accept? Is there a separate device? Do you integrate into their point of sale system? How does it actually work?
What we do is central integration to the point of sale system. And that is really between us and the point of sale system. So, mm-hmm. for example, we are integrated with PCMS, which is very large in the US and the UK. They have Walgreens, et cetera, and Marks and Spencer's in the UK, et cetera. And we're actually integrated to about 100 different point of sale makers already, because we've been doing this for a long, long time. You know, the company has been around for 14 years. And thus payments. We do about 3.1 billion payments a year to compare with Mastercard, who does 32 billion. So it's a bit bigger than us. Just a little tad.
Well, okay. they've been around for 50 years. When you're around for 50 years, you'll be at that level too.
I said, what took them so long? But anyway, that's... but in any case, so very often we already have an integration to the POS system that the merchant is using. So they essentially have to just request that module from the cashier maker. So it's literally a flick of a button. Now that, and then they're up everywhere in their whole store chain, right? And what they have to do, above that, is that they have to install a QR code, which is in the form of a digital QR code on a screen, or a physical, which is really a sticker. Now, in that sticker that we provide them with, is we've baked in an RFID chip, so you can use your NFC capacity on the phone if you choose to do so. In our experience, actually, most people use the QR code because it's actually faster and... more convenient, but you can do both. We're we're independent. We can do NFC or QR. It really shouldn't matter, as a matter of fact.
So what merchant segments are you targeting with your entry into the U.S. market? It's a big place, very fragmented merchants, categories, obviously very big geography. What are your thoughts?
Well, you should, as a mobile payment service, you should target first grocery stores and then QSRs. And why should you do that? Because those are the most challenging payment situations. Anywhere where you think there is a queue where you go shopping, that's where you want to start. Because if you can handle those, i.e. speed, and that it works without problems, et cetera, et cetera. Then it works in all the other stores too. So, and you can see what I say there, right? You go into a Walmart, then you have much higher pressure on the cashier point than in a fashion store. So you got to start with the hardest ones.
Well, I think it also builds frequency, and that's important to get people into the habit of using the mobile payment method and build.
Yeah, that's true. So, that's true, in your conversation with merchants, if you think of medium term, they will always see, can you handle the grocery store flow? And if you can, you can handle everything else, essentially.
Well, Peter, it's been really great to get to know you and your vision for Seamless and your thoughts, at least your preliminary take on the U.S. market, and certainly it's been a lively discussion. We certainly look forward to seeing more of you here in the U.S. and getting caught up as you work with merchants and consumers and get your product in market. Thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Karen.